Remember to take their chairs, take their seats. I'm going to call this meeting to order. We are going to start the business of the committee. We don't have a quorum, and as we get one, we will officially call the meeting to order. But today we have a three bills up today, members. I would like to get through the first two. You know, there's some inconsequential bill that if it doesn't pass from the we have three bills up, and I am going to call Representative Moline up for House File 351. And seeing how this bill is one of some importance to a couple members on this committee, if you'll give me just a moment, Mr. Messick, would you care to? You can just leave your stuff there.
Leave it there. Well, welcome to the committee, everyone, and I'd like to move House File 351. Do we have?
Just have her present the bill.
In a few. Representative Moline, would you mind talking about the bill a little bit?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, for hearing us today on House File 351. Having to do with the board structure of the IRRRB, Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. And I also have Commissioner Sertich here with me today to talk a little bit about the board when I'm done presenting the bill. The current board at the IRRRB is made up of five senators and five representatives in addition to three non-elected members. And the current statute requires that a majority of the legislators appointed have at least half of their legislative district within the taconite assistance area, which is the area that the IRRRB serves. And unfortunately, after redistricting, we can't meet the statutory requirements for the legislative membership on the board. So we are proposing some updates to the statute to reflect our new legislative districts. And the Section 1... Subdivision 1A is, I guess, the real meat of the bill, and it would change the structure to consist of legislators who have at least a third of their legislative district within the taconite assistance area, and they would have seats on the board. Currently, there are five representatives and three senators who have at least a third of their legislative district within the taconite assistance area. This bill also does remove the three non-elected members from the board. Non-elected members were first added to the IRRRB in 1998, and there are a couple of reasons that we're removing the non-elected members, and most of it goes to public policy concerns. We do spend millions of dollars at the IRRRB on a number of different projects and initiatives that Commissioner Sertich will talk about, but because of the amount of money that we spend, I do believe that it's important that board members are accountable to the public through the electoral process. And because of that, we're proposing that only elected members have a seat on the board. And the second reason is really to get the politics out of the IRRRB. The three non-elected members, one is appointed by the Speaker of the House, one by the Senate Majority Leader, and one by the Governor. So, you know, oftentimes, although they've been, you know, valuable members of our board, they're often appointed based on their political affiliation and whether they're in line with the people who are appointing them. So we think this is a way to get the politics off the board and instead just have a board that's consisted of legislators who actually represent the Iron Range. Finally, there are a number of technical changes that really just go to the fact that right now we have 13 members and we're going down to 8 members. And so because of that, we just have to change the number of votes that are required to approve an action. And that's really just to...
Excuse me, Representative Moline?
Yes.
I'd just like to call the meeting to order. Do I tap the gavel here now? There we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, yeah, in my closing comments, the technical changes are really just due to the fact that we have a new number of members on the board. And, Mr. Chair, I also do have an amendment that has some again, technical changes, the A1 amendment. So if you would be willing to move the A1 amendment.
Yep. I would like to move House File 351 before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then also if you would be willing to move the A1 amendment as well.
We'll move.
And thank you, and I'd also like to recommend that it pass to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at this time, if we could just go to Commissioner Sirdis for brief comments, then either of us would be happy to answer any questions that the board might have.
Thank you, Commissioner Sirdis. Could you introduce yourself?
Sure, Mr. Chair and board members. Tony Sirdis, Commissioner of the IRRB. Great to be back before you again. Members, I was here 2 weeks ago giving an overview of the IRRB and what we do. But as it pertains to this bill, I just want to add two more bits of information, and then I'm open to answer any questions. One deals with actually how we function and operate. And so many of you may remember when I was here before, in order for us to expend these taxpayer dollars, these local taxpayer dollars, the process is the commissioner presents projects before the board, and the board votes on those projects. And so that's the check and balance, and they hold the commissioner and the agency accountable. We do not have a board right now, and this generally happens every 2 years. The board goes away, the previous board, and we don't have board meetings, and therefore we can't vote on our economic development projects until another board is established. And because now the state law does not match with the legislative districts after redistricting, we can have a board and or board meetings or do any of our good work of economic development projects until a board is appointed. So I hope that you all can see fit to fast track this bill. We can get a board appointed and get back to work. Now the good news is we don't have any projects imminent, but I do know in the coming months here, probably by March or April, we'll have a few job creation economic development projects we'll need voted on. And then just a little bit of history on the size of the board. This board, our agency's been around for 73 years this year. We've had anywhere from 7 board members up to 13 and in between. So the size of the board is in relation to what it's been in years past. So I'm open to answering any questions as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Sirdis. And I would like to move House File 351's Amendment A1. And as the author, to put it in the form the author would like. Perfect. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that any members might have.
Representative Gunther?
Yeah, I'd like to question the chairman. Why isn't this bill going to GovOps? It certainly looks like a prime candidate. The chairman of GovOps say anything to you at all?
GovOps has not asked for it at this particular time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we thought we were going to send it.
Okay. It just seems like that's the logical place to send it.
Mr. Chair, do you mind?
Not at all.
Representative Moline, have you talked to the chair of GovOps?
Mr. Chair, no, I have not. The chair has not requested to see the bill. I guess we had assumed it be going straight to the General Register from here.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
You do understand that if the chair of GovOps requests this, it will slow the bill down a little bit because it will have to go through the floor process, and we'll have to re-refer it.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair, I understand that. The path in the Senate, not that we necessarily have to do what they did, but
yeah,
the path in the Senate
way to put that.
Was from jobs to the floor. I understand that it would lengthen the process out a little bit if the chair of GovOps were to acquire it or were to ask for it from the floor. We are trying to get this legislation, I guess, accomplished as soon as possible because we don't have a board right now. And we're actually past the statutory timeline to have a board appointed. So we're in a bit of a a hurry to get this legislation passed. So, you know, again, I would prefer that it go straight to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
You move to the floor at your own risk, and I think that's a great idea.
Thank you.
Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, it's a big bill, and I can't find where it is, but I think you're removing some non-legislator members from the board. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiefer, yes, currently there are three non-elected board members who serve on the IRRRB. That was first enacted in 1998. My reason for doing that has to go mostly to public policy and accountability. We spend in the tens of millions of dollars every year at the agency for a number of different projects. And I think that because of the amount of money that we're spending, it's important that our members are accountable to the voters through the election process. I know that in my own election and campaigns, I spend about half my time talking about the legislature and about the other half talking about the IRRRB. So it is something that the voters on the Iron Range pay very close attention to, and I think that with the amount of money involved, it's important that board members have accountability to the voters.
Just a quick follow-up. You know, at the very beginning you said you wanted to get politics out of this, and to me that seems a little contrary, and I just want to make sure that the board is balanced and well represented and it isn't political.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiefer, it's legislators that are elected by citizens on the Iron Range, and the IRRRB only services the Taconite Assistance Area, which covers portions of seven counties in northeastern Minnesota, and it's the voters and citizens that live there that elect members to the House of Representatives and to the Minnesota Senate, and then it would be those members that would serve on the IRRRB. So we believe that, you know, the citizens who live there and are actually being served by the agency have a direct say in who serves on the agency under the proposed language.
Follow-up, Representative? Representative Blaine or Commissioner Sertich, anything else to add?
No, Mr. Chair and members, just... Oh. Sorry, it looks like there's one more question.
Representative Albright?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, in your opening comments, you talked about getting politics out of the IRRRB, about fair representation. We're going through some other, you know, contortions with regard to governance with the health insurance exchange bill and keeping politics and keeping providers out of the game there. I'm just wondering, given that this committee has three members that would serve on the IRRRB, what your position would be on taking a vote that would be self-serving.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's only two of us here that would be on the IRRRB. But I guess to your question, I have an automatic seat on the board right now because my district is 98% within the Taconite Assistance Area. So under the current board structure, I would have a seat on the board as well. I don't see it as a conflict of interest. It looks like Commissioner Sertich wants to answer that question. But
Commissioner Sertich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I'm trying to understand your question about self-serving, but the board members as legislators are held to the same standards as you all are as elected representatives in the House of Representatives. And so if an issue came before the IRRRB that they had direct conflict with, whether it be a family member or an interest in that way, time and again people recuse themselves from voting on the board, and so there is no self-interest. The interest are tax dollars that are expended in three ways. Number one, it goes to the communities of the Iron Range, which the legislators don't have a self-interest in, but they have an elected interest in representing. Number two, we fund businesses, and it has, on occasion, there have been relationships with board members, both elected and non-elected, and those board members then recuse themselves from voting on those instances. And the third interest that we fund is workforce development at our colleges or our high schools, and there is no self-interest in that one as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Commissioner Sertich, and then in light of that conversation, then the comfort factor or the in full disclosure of no conflict of conflict of interest, mm-hmm. would it be the position of the members who do or would serve on the IRRRB board on this committee? My assumption that they would have no trouble recusing themselves from this vote then.
Commissioner Sertich?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, none of them serve on the board right now. We don't have a board. So, I mean, I guess I'm way out of my bounds here. I'm not a lawyer. I'm sitting next to one, though. But I would probably ask counsel in that instance if that was necessary to recuse themselves. There is no interest in serving on the board. I mean, it'd be almost like, I would guess it'd be almost like, did you vote for yourself in the election or not? Or did you recuse yourself from voting in your election? I certainly hope you'd vote for yourself. I know I always did when I was in the legislature. I wanted to start one ahead. But I would defer to probably somebody higher up the food chain than me in legal counsel to say if there's a conflict of interest in voting in this legislation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
I'm not going to disagree with the statement, Commissioner. But I would think that in light of the decision to create the board or recreate the board, that council would be available to those members. And just for the issue of absolutely no impropriety being a part of the decision, I'm just suggesting that might be not a goodwill gesture, but a gesture of good faith that might be extended by those members.
Thank you. And just for sake of time today, we love it when people get to talk about the range, but there are other things that we're going to be dealing with in today's committee hearing. So if we can keep things moving, and Representative Fabian, you're up for the next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, I'm wondering about the three appointed members, and you talked about wanting to be accountable have an accountability. If the IRRRB is bringing language like that to this body, and this body has the current authority to appoint members to that, I'm not sure that I'm understanding your concern about accountability by removing people who are appointed by this body, and this body obviously is involved in the legislation that is coming forward and will come forward in the future. I'm having a little trouble with that.
Representative Moline?
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, just to be clear, the three non-elected members, one is appointed by the Speaker of the House, one by the Senate Majority Leader, and one by the Governor. When I talk about accountability, I'm talking to the people that actually live in the Taconite Assistance Area, since those are, you know, we're a very unique state agency, which many of you have found out over a number of years, but, you know, we only serve, as I mentioned, portions of seven counties in northeastern Minnesota. So people on the board are making decisions on behalf of those people and those taxpayers that live in northeastern Minnesota. So I'm talking about accountability as far as to the people that live in the Taconite Assistance Area. Now, board members should know, or members should know, that we do have a number of citizen advisory boards at the IRRRB that we utilize quite frequently, and they're just members of communities and just citizens who come in and give us their ideas, and we take them very seriously. And so those are all remaining in place, our citizen advisory boards.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair? Yeah. Members, I just want you to all know that I have promised Rochester a full hour or more, and I'm going to send the CA out to schedule a room for this evening, and we will be back after session if we go on too long here. Happy to do it, too. I have a Valentine's Day dinner going on. I'm not opposed to making sure things move along.
And Representative Fabian, we're going to have questions from Representative Lohmer and Gunther next, and then that'll be take you off as well. Okay. That'll be, so we're going to end with Representative Lohmer then.
I'll ask my question right to Commissioner Leader.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Fabian, do you have a follow-up there?
Oh, I thought that I was being asked to...
No, you can go ahead.
Just
just telling people what can happen.
Well, my drive home is a lot longer than yours, so I'll pass. Thank you.
And Representative Lomer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, you were just talking about the citizens that you have been hearing from. I guess I'm curious, what kind of feedback have you heard from citizens about this change? Has there been any feedback, and what has it been?
Representative Moline?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lomer. That's a good question. I honestly, I go back home to my district every weekend, usually on Thursday nights if we get out of here early enough. And I haven't heard any negative comments about removing non-elected members. To be honest with you, we don't have very many controversial votes at the IRRRB. It's very rare that we even have one person dissent when we take board votes. They're usually unanimous votes. Once in a while, there'll be one citizen member that votes no. It's usually former Representative Joe Begich. to be honest with you, we're a pretty non-controversial board in our region, and so I think that people have been pretty open to these changes, especially due to the fact that I mentioned earlier that even on my own campaign, I spend about half my time talking about the legislature and half my time talking about the IRRRB, and so voters are very in tune with what we do, and I think they like the idea of being able to have a say in who serves on that board.
Representative Lomer, any follow-up there? Thank you. Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have my own reservations about removing the three non-elected members from the board. And I think it behooves a larger discussion, especially in light of what you just said, that there's typically a unanimous vote. So your idea of removing the non-elected officials from the board really is almost a muted point. But at this particular point, I would ask that we just vote on this and move it to the floor. And actually, Mr. Chair,
yes?
I'd like to change the recommendation to GovOps, because I think that really does need a little bit more work.
That's right. Representative Moline or Sertich, do you have anything to add?
No, Mr. Chair.
I can come down anytime.
Thank you very much. And seeing no other speakers with representatives with questions, I'd like to now make the motion to move. Like to recommend to pass and re-refer House File 351 to, as amended, to Government Ops. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. No.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next bill.
Thank you.
Representative Norton. Representative Norton Day at the Capitol. Do you care to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 395 to be passed and to be put laid.
Where does it have to
put
go,
into
Madam?
Your
laid over for possible
for
inclusion?
Possible inclusion into your omnibus bill. Yes, sir.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Hopefully, this will be short and sweet. We do have a bill before you that's pretty self-explanatory, but I'm just going to touch on it a little bit. A little over a year ago, we were approached down at Olmsted County, all the delegation, of which Representative Benson actually had this bill last year. It's a bipartisanly supported bill. The request was the group that invited us explained to us that there are certain persons on the spectrum, Asperger's in particular we're talking about, but the autism spectrum disorders that do not qualify for services like job supports. And these are individuals that have that we're talking about here, the ones that we met who had gone through high school, some of them in college, and are having trouble keeping and maintaining jobs in their community in order to be self-sufficient and productive members of society, which they would like to do. And the idea was brought forward that with just a little bit of help, we believe that this job support will allow these individuals to remain in the workplace and be self-sufficient. And so what we're asking is for a pilot. The fiscal note on it is $68,000, and it would be a pilot program. If it works, I would be very happy to bring it back and roll it out further, but we want to give it a shot and see if we can't have this this person who will work with the fiscal agent will be the county, but work with SEMSIL and the office, the Department of Economic Development, DEED, to see if we can't support these individuals and see if we can't get better outcomes for them. Currently, there are many unemployed, underemployed, briefly employed, and we really want to change that. So that's just kind of an overview of what the bill is hoping to do, and I do have individuals from the Social Odyssey Committee, a constituent, I think a penis maybe, but that would like to just talk with you for a very few minutes. I do also have someone from Olmsted County who doesn't need to testify if you don't need, but just to show that they're willing to be the fiscal agent for this small amount of money, and someone from DEED here as well.
We'll take your word for that.
Okay, and so they are here in the audience if you need them.
Ms. Walker, is it?
Pat Dunn-Walker.
Mr. Dunn-Walker, if you'd identify yourself for the tape and briefly...
good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, my name and members of the committee. My name is Pat Dunn-Walker, and I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm testifying on behalf of Bill 395. As Representative Norton mentioned, last year a group of us came together. We were concerned about our young adults with Asperger's, high-functioning autism, and other related conditions, that they were not able to find employment or keep employment. And the other reason I'm here is because I'm also the parent of an almost 18-year-old young man named Kip who has Asperger's syndrome. For those of you who are not familiar with Asperger's or high-functioning autism, these individuals are highly intelligent, honest, hardworking, and loyal. And with support, they can become excellent employees and citizens. However, they have some challenges related to employment, more specifically social difficulty, social understanding of social cues and what goes into the workplace, also organizational skills and executive functioning. With support and with extra training, they're able to be very successful in jobs. My son is currently in high school, and he does receive some support in high school and is a very strong student. I'm afraid for him when he leaves high school, what will there be there for him after he gets out of the post-high school programs? Unemployment rate for people on the spectrum with Asperger's or high-functioning autism is upwards of 60 to 70%. And these citizens are very law-abiding citizens, but because of their lack of social understanding, they sometimes wind up on the wrong side of the law. And it doesn't have to be that way. They can be independent members of society, financially independent members of society. Last January, we came together as a community organization. We invited the legislators, people from the school board, members of Olmsted County, and had a two-hour session where this bill, 395, was drafted by Representative Norton here. And it's supported, as Representative Norton mentioned, by both sides of the aisle. It would provide the supports. It's a pilot study, but it would provide the supports necessary for job success for our individuals. And The bill has 3.1 of this bill. It says this would provide ongoing employment supports, independent living services necessary to secure, maintain, and advance in employment, and to promote an individual's self-sufficiency and financial independence. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, for giving me the opportunity to speak in support of Bill 395. And if you have any questions, I'm sure someone here can answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn-Walker. Did you have something to add?
Mr. Chair, thank you.
It's a great bill, and it should pass?
Exactly. My name is David Hancox. I am the Vice President of the State Association of Minnesota Centers for Independent Living, and I'm here today instead of Vicki Dolly-Molly, who is the Executive Director of SEMSIL, the Southeastern Center for Independent Living, located in Rochester, that is identified as one of the partners in this project. So I'm here primarily to identify our support from the Centers for Independent Living and also to field any questions from the committee that there might be.
Thank you, Mr. Hancock. Are there any questions for a bipartisan bill that was passed by this legislature last year?
Mr. Chairman, I think this is a great bill.
I think they had me when they walked in the door. Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, thank you for that endorsement.
Representative Ward, did you have a question or comment?
Comment, Mr. Chair, please, just real quick. Members, I, for 34 years of my teaching career, 22 of them was working with children with emotionally behavior disordered, and a number of my students had Asperger's.
Well, makes you ready to come to the legislature.
I've said that more than once, Mr. Chair. So I've worked with children, young adults that have Asperger's. In particular, I think of a young man right now that I had in 1990, I think, or 89, 80, 91, somewhere in that area, who still is not working, is still is not independent. And these are great young men and young women that, you know, with a little bit of help and assistance, can become very productive members of our society, and many of them have and do. So I thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I know, and I've seen it, and members, I would strongly encourage all of us to support this bill.
Representative Norton, I don't think you need to have any. You've had good comments already.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. We'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you so very much, and this is an important issue.
Thank you very much for your
thank
support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Norton, I think you get to stay right there.
I do. Thank you. I appreciate you getting
in. Members, we have on the list, I think, 7 or 8 testifiers to present. I'm hoping that not all 8 of them want to present, because I'd like to hold back about a half hour's worth of time for questions. This is a pretty significant bill. I would prefer not to dig into the actual financing of it, because it's a tax issue, and it will go into the tax bill if we're going to do it. So that will be looked at in the tax committee. We, I hope, can keep our comments and our questions to the economic development, you know, what it's going to buy, how it's going to buy it, what is the end product of it. So, Representative Norton, if you'd like to move your bill.
I would very much like to move House File 409, and I believe that is to pass and go to GovOps.
That is my understanding, it goes to GovOps at this point. It's got 3 or 4 other stops.
It'll have a number of stops, yes.
So, having said that, please present your bill and your cast of supporting characters.
No comment. Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to give a brief overview, and then we're going to let some testifiers go, and then you can shoot questions off. This is our very first stop on a very important and exciting adventure I think we're going to be on this year. I'm going to head off, save your questions, and then I think, while I'll be happy to answer some, the professionals behind me and the folks who've been working on this for 3 years will be able to do probably even a better job. House File 409, the Destination Medical Center Initiative, provides Minnesota with a major economic development opportunity that will deliver significant benefits, stimulating billions in private investment, thousands of new jobs, and billions of new tax revenue in the state of Minnesota. Mayo Clinic is currently a world leader in healthcare, the largest private employer in Minnesota, and provides billions in economic impact to our state's economy. Mayo's position as a global medical destination is a reality, but sustaining that reputation is not. Without continued growth and innovation, without private investment, and without the public infrastructure necessary to support this growth, Mayo Clinic in Minnesota will lose their competitive position as a global medical destination. And we're here today to see that that doesn't happen. Before you today is a plan to secure Rochester and Minnesota as a medical destination for patients throughout the country and world, and well into the future, and to drive significant economic and job growth for the next 20 years. Plans for Mayo Clinic to invest in excess of $3 billion of Mayo's private capital in Minnesota to expand the needed buildings and facilities throughout Rochester is part of this plan. A $2 billion investment by individual private investments to support patients and visitors and employee demand for more lodging, housing, retail, hospitality, recreation, and other amenities that a strong destination community has is part of this plan. Approximately 25 to 30,000 new direct jobs will be created over the next 20 years from the expansion of Mayo Clinic employment and other business activities related to the plan, the DMC plan. Estimates are for the creation of an approximate 1,800 to 2,200 construction jobs per year as a result of this initiative. Hundreds of thousands of new patients and visitors will travel to Rochester and Minnesota each year. And I think you'll hear later about we currently have many, many visitors. This will increase that. Approximately $3 billion in new tax revenue will be generated to the state and local governments. And Mayo Clinic will aggressively work to retain in Minnesota the new businesses that emerge from Mayo Clinic's extensive medical research. And I know that's something the chair has had interest in the past, and we might hear about it here in a few moments from him. The Destination Medical Center public financing component outlined in this legislation is an innovative finance plan. This is new. It's different. It has a 10-to-1 dollar ratio of private to public investment, as well as a guarantee that no public financing will be provided without proof that tax revenues have actually been generated to the state or to the state by Mayo Clinic and this particular program that we're going to bring to you today. The $585 million proposed public investment will be made over a 20-year period in public infrastructure and improvements that support the growth of employment, visitation, and spending in the market. And I want to be clear that $585 million we're asking of public funding does not go to Mayo Clinic. It goes to infrastructure in our community. This 20-year, multi-billion dollar Destination Medical Center plan represents one of the largest economic development initiatives in the country, and it will deliver significant benefits to Minnesota, including thousands of new jobs and billions in new tax revenues. With that, Mr. Chair, that's just a big overview for you. I'm going to let some of the testifiers speak, and then we will all stand for questions at the end, if that's all right.
That's fine with
okay.
me.
I'm going to move aside.
Members, I would ask that mm-hmm. I'm going to try to give the presenters about 20, 25 minutes. That would allow us to have at least a half an hour's worth of questions, and hopefully we can get through most of them. So
Mr. Chair, I'm going to remove myself and let the speakers come up here, and you call me when you need me.
Ms. Simmons.
Thank you. My name is Patty Simmons. I'm a physician at Mayo Clinic with the privilege of seeing patients. I'm also an executive in the office of the president at Mayo Clinic. Chair Mahoney and honorable representatives, members of this committee, thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present this project to you. We do think it's a very exciting project, and I'd like to make some framing comments and then use some slides to make some points, some data points that I think will be helpful. It's better than if I try to draw graphs or remember all the numbers. We've been studying for quite a while what Mayo Clinic should do to secure its future. We're launching with you today a 20-year plan going into the future that involves billions of dollars of new investment, almost all of it, 90% of it from the private sector. We want to invest in our future. Mayo Clinic likes being Mayo Clinic. We love fulfilling our mission. We love doing that in Minnesota. We need to grow to succeed. We need to grow to maintain and to capture that historic Mayo Clinic we know, where we're the destination for healing and health and hope for so many people, people from 50 states, people from 145 countries of the world. And we want to invest so we can do that, and we want to invest in Rochester, Minnesota. Our strategy is to do just that. Our patients come from all walks of life, from all over the world, and we want to serve them very well. About 500,000 people come as patients to Rochester every year, and they bring people with them. So we generate about 3 million visitors to Rochester each year. It takes quite a bit to serve that population. We're fairly large. We are the largest private employer in Minnesota. Statewide in Minnesota, we have 43,000 employees. 34,000 of those are in Rochester. We need a lot of facilities to take care of our mission, our patients, to conduct our research, to educate the workforce of tomorrow. And so we have about 15 million square feet in Rochester of Mayo Clinic facilities. We're proud of our contribution to the state of Minnesota. We were born here and we like contributing to the success of Minnesota. Our economic impact on the state of Minnesota is $9.8 billion per year. That represents about 4% of the state's GDP. We want to continue to contribute, and we'd actually like to pick up our contribution to the state. I thought you might be interested. This interested me in seeing where the Mayo Clinic employees live, and I would like to recruit somebody from each of the counties that doesn't have a dot right now. But this is where our patients come from. I mean, our workforce comes from. Over 40,000 live in the state of Minnesota. We're out there with people in a lot of counties. I think it's not just living out in Minnesota that creates that image among Minnesotans that we're glad to have Mayo Clinic here. I think it's that we are glad to have Mayo Clinic here. It is a destination for hope, for healing. In the world, more people have heard about Mayo Clinic than anything else in Minnesota. And we want to continue to have that position that attracts people to our state. There was a recent article in the Star Tribune, February 10th, where Lee Schaefer said this. I kind of like it. Mayo in Rochester is a happy accident, a major global center in a small Midwestern city that gets cold in the winter and is not that easy to reach. I think Minnesotans like having Mayo Clinic and like having it here with us. As we look at what we could do in the future, and we need to grow to be able to secure our future, we've done extensive analyses. We've been highly engaged in looking at the future of healthcare in America, looking at the future economy of America and the world. We are a global leader. We're recognized internationally. And globalization is really shifting market forces in a way we need to be prepared, we need to address. Competitors are very active with investment in various parts of the United States and in various parts of the world. We often hear, we want to be the Mayo Clinic of London, of Thailand, of Ohio, of wherever. We've made a business decision at Mayo Clinic. We want to grow here and maintain and actually grow our presence as a global destination. It's a big deal. We can do that if we have the private investment we expect and the public investment that's essential to going forward. We'd like to create new jobs. We anticipate this project, over the course of its time, will create 35 to 45,000 new jobs. 14 to 16,000, based on our analyses, would be Mayo Clinic jobs, and the rest in other sectors. We can talk a little more about that. And we expect to increase our economic impact in the state of Minnesota substantially with the numbers you see in the about $3 billion range. If the public tools become available and are authorized, we have incredible opportunity to attract hundreds of thousands more people, more patients to come to Rochester, Minnesota, and to spend time in our state and contribute to our economy. It took us a long time to get to this point, to come to you. We had to do our analyses in order to justify Mayo Clinic's decision that we will invest, if we have the support, we will invest $3.5 billion in this growth. We're confident about the plan. The estimates we have is that the private sector would additionally invest over $2 billion more dollars. And as you know, we're looking at a state commitment that is about a tenth of that. And we'll talk more about that finance piece later at the chair's discretion. I want to give you just a picture, and it's literally a picture, of what this investment would look like, because people have asked very appropriately, what's that money for? And I want to show you what it would be for. Mayo Clinic is not asking for a dime for Mayo Clinic. Not a dime, not a dollar, not $1 million. We're not asking for money. We're going to put our money into this. Our money would be used to create the facilities we need to take care of our patients and our mission and the incremental patients coming from all over the world. So we're talking hospital facilities, clinical space. We need more lab space for discovery and to support our practice. We want biomedical facilities. We generate research that can be translated into improving people's lives by commercializing our technology. We want to do that in Minnesota. It's been hard to do that in Minnesota. We want to create the infrastructure that allows those companies, those new companies, to start and stay in Minnesota. The I'll maybe move down to the bottom, the private investment, the red bullet. Already we understand in working with developers and working with the private sector that there's a hunger for investing in this sort of growth with a variety of things that serve directly the patients that would come. And then, of course, there's work that goes beyond that in, again, developing that business sector on commercializing our research. The hospitality industry must grow to accommodate the growth in the visitors to Rochester and to Minnesota. And we expect more retail to come because people... They spend a lot of time at the clinic, and I don't mean that they're just waiting all the time. They spend a lot of time at the clinic, spend time at the hospital, but so much time is spent out in the community, and we need to meet their needs in the community and their expectations if they're going to come and return. What we don't do at Mayo Clinic is what we are asking for a public support for, and that is with the infrastructure that government does, the roads, the bridges, the sewers, the things you all know, you and local government know about, preparing the sites, transportation, getting people and supporting the people and supporting the growth of our facilities and our destination medical center. I won't talk about the finances, Chair Mahoney, because you said not to. And I've decided that I ought to do what you say. I've been coached pretty well, I think, on that. But I would like, if I may, to invite someone else to come forward after me. Do I get to do that? May I do that? Chair Mahoney,
Ms. Simmons, go right ahead.
Okay, thanks. Chair Mahoney and members of the committee, I'd like to turn things over to Ms. Amy Supple, who has been working with us and helping us develop our business plan. She will have good points to make to you and good answers for questions. She's from the HAMS company. Ms. Supple.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Mahoney and representative members. I will
please,
just quickly...
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Amy Supple from the HAMS company. I will just quickly speak to the financial model and can answer questions after it. But what I would point to, in the chart you see the $3 billion of economic impact that is expected to occur from this investment over this 20-year period. And The investment is taken down. The investment is taken down over the full 20 years. It's not an upfront investment. And the way the funding model works is essentially that we prove the incremental growth. There's a proven growth of 1.5 times any appropriation that is asked for in any given year. The appropriation, no problem. The appropriation will be certified, proven in advance, and then the investment made in Rochester's future. And so it's a true public-private partnership to move forward with private investment leading the way and public infrastructure investment to help support the growth as it moves on. I'd welcome any questions that you'd like.
Well, why don't you stick around? I'm sure the mayor would like to say a few words. I'm sure there's any number of other people that would like to. I'm going to give you about another 10 minutes, maybe 15, and then we're going to open it up for questions if I could. I see you've got a new assistant up there, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, I do. Who obviously knows a lot more about this than I do, so that's good. Mr. Chair and members, it's good to see you all again. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you, and I hope you get to your dinner tonight in time. The city of I'm Ardell Brady, the mayor of Rochester, Minnesota. City of Rochester has always worked closely with Mayo Clinic, and with Destination Medical Center plan, we have worked even more closely with Mayo Clinic and other community leaders in our city and our region to develop a plan that we think will further establish our state as a global leader in health care for the future. Last year, the president of the only private university in Norway spoke to the Regional Council of Mayors and said when he talks to groups around the world and mentions Minnesota, he seldom gets a reaction. But when he mentions Mayo Clinic, there is immediate recognition. I also was privileged a couple years ago to go and got that same response when I went with 9 other mayors to Saudi Arabia. Except in the city of Jeddah, 3 young ladies at their Chamber of Commerce meeting nodded when I said I'm Ardell Brady, mayor of the city of Rochester, home of the Mayo Clinic. In unison, they said, and the Mall of America? The community is enthusiastic and supports the DMC vision and plan. This long-term visionary and innovative plan will secure Rochester and the Mayo Clinic's future as a global destination medical center. The city will be supporting the DMC financially. Approximately $60 million of the proposed $585 million in public costs will be financed locally through Rochester City sales tax funding and by employing other local financing tools such as revenue bonding, tax abatement, and TIF tax increment financing. We already have skin in the game. In November, Rochester voters approved by a 2-to-1 margin $20 million in city sales tax revenues for Destination Medical Center. DMC is about providing the ideal patient, companion, visitor, and citizen experience, as well as creating new jobs and attracting world-class talent. It is in the best interest of Rochester and the state of Minnesota for Mayo to locate its DMC here. The economic impact from drawing new patients and visitors to Rochester each year will positively benefit Olmsted County and the state as a whole, generating a significant boost to our economy, creating thousands of new jobs and billions in new tax revenues. The overall growth and success of Rochester also benefits surrounding communities and the region as a whole. Mayo provides employment and benefits to families throughout southeastern Minnesota and the region. Over 51,000 people commute to Rochester for their employment. 40 surrounding communities are served by commuter buses every day. And I should add that 3 buses come from Bloomington and Invergrove every day, bringing 100 riders along. We've got a strong coalition of community organizations, local government, businesses, and others who are committed to the DMC and to the successful passage of this finance plan. We are ready to work with the state and other key players to make this a reality in Minnesota. And hear me, in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think there's another testifier. Can you please identify yourself for the tape?
Shane Mandel with Life Science Alley. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, On behalf of Life Science Alley, our nearly 700 organizations and more than 250,000 Minnesotans employed by them, including Mayo Clinic, we're here to really support this proposal. As we chatted with Mayo in the city of Rochester about where this plan could take us, we came to the conclusion that this is really about making plans to be exceptional. As stated, this isn't money for Mayo. This is about making sure that Rochester, Minnesota is the world's premier medical destination. The Mayo model has been the driver of healthcare around the world for 100 years. Today, as you heard, there are threats, and threats from competitors here in the U.S., Cleveland Clinic, Massachusetts General, Johns Hopkins, and each of those facilities that want to be Mayo have things about their communities, larger cities, more amenities, the ability to draw talent and serve a global audience far better than we can today in Rochester. People have choices. Information is far more rampant. The ability to find healthcare, the best healthcare in the world, people have choices around the experience. And what Mayo is asking for and what we are supportive of is helping to transform Rochester to make sure that it is that global destination. This is also about growth. It's about jobs in Minnesota. When we think about Mayo, we think about great healthcare, but Mayo is not only a huge employer in Minnesota, the largest private employer, with great growth metrics. They're also about our future. Mayo has been actively engaged in building policies and procedures and bringing dollars to the table to inflate their commercialization. A lot of the plans that you see through the Destination Medical Center are about supporting the kind of entrepreneurs and investor community, taking Mayo innovation and moving it to the world in ways that create additional jobs for Minnesota. I think the reason that our members are so supportive of this project is the unique ecosystem around healthcare and research and development that does exist here in Minnesota, and Mayo is such a critical part of that. Our companies regularly go to Mayo to work on clinical trials, to engage their expertise. There are folks at Mayo inventing products that our medical device companies and that our drug companies ultimately benefit from. The ecosystem here in Minnesota is unique, but it is under threat. And so as we look to the future, if we want Mayo to be the brand that the mayor mentioned around the world, for future generations, this has to be part of the solution. It has to be part of the partnership that Minnesota engages Mayo in. Mayo will create more companies and more jobs. Mayo will continue to be the place that people around the world want to go, and that will benefit all of us. So, again, on behalf of Life Science Alley, our 250,000 Minnesota employees, we are strongly supportive of this and think this is one of the most exciting economic development proposals from checking with our peers in other states that we've seen in the last decade. And so we strongly urge you to support it and help us to keep Rochester moving in the right direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape. And
my name is Russell Hess, and I work for the Laborers District Council of Minnesota in North Dakota. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm one of the greater impact sort of people. I live in Plainview, Minnesota, about 25 miles northeast of Rochester. I always try to get in front of that bus going to Mayo when I drive up here to go to work every day. I'm here to speak in favor of the Destination Medical Center proposed for Rochester. The Mayo Clinic and the building trades have a long history of partnering together to build Mayo, Rochester, and really all of southeastern Minnesota into what it is today. And our members, I just spoke with them at our meeting on Tuesday night, are eager to get going on the Destination Medical Center. In fact, right now, building trades members are working on three major projects at the Mayo Clinic, and we've already put in over a million work hours on those projects, which a rough estimate means a $30 million impact just on those three projects in wages from our members doing work on those. So as I mentioned at my union meeting on Tuesday night, as we were talking about this proposal, and there's a lot of talk about this proposal, there are two different reactions from the group, the guys in the room, and the gals in the room, frankly.
Glad
one,
you mentioned Glad you mentioned that.
There were. The first reaction I noticed was from the retired members who happened to be there, right? And we immediately got into a long conversation about all the projects that they had worked on at Mayo. And we actually had to cut them off a little bit and say, we got other stuff to talk about at the meeting. But they are super proud of the work they've done and the way they were able to support their families with good-paying jobs, great pensions now. The state's not supporting these guys. They're supporting themselves on their pensions they earned and good health care benefits. The other reaction was from the younger guys, who when we started talking about $5 billion worth of investment in construction and other things over the next 20 years, they see that as their career and the future for them and their family. And the relationship between the building trades and Mayo has been a generational thing, right? We talk, there's any number of guys who can talk about their dads who worked in the clinic and their grandfathers who worked in the clinic. There's going to be a few more now starting who can talk about their moms who worked in the clinic. Building and working there. We want to be careful to talk not just about jobs. These are really careers, and these are the kinds of projects and economic development that can build careers for working people, not just one job here, one job there. This is 20 years of projects. People can count on this for their entire lives. People can move to Rochester, and building trades workers can move to Rochester and know pretty surely there's going to be some steady work in the community. So in closing, I'm going to leave it there. In closing, our members are ready and eager to go, building projects over the next 20 years that will contribute to our state being recognized as a global leader and one that invests in smart economic developments. This is Mike Cron. He's president of the building trades in Southeast Minnesota. He's my expert on what actually goes on inside the clinic. So if you have questions for us, we're available.
Mr. Hess, I have one quick question. How many letters have your members written to their representatives?
On this?
That was more rhetorical.
Okay.
Please identify yourself for the tape.
Letters you've gotten from our members in the past.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and identify myself. Once again, I'm Mike Cron. I'm the Southeast Minnesota Building and Trades president. I'm going to just waive my speaking time for questions later. So Russell summed it up very well, what this is going to mean to us, that the Building and Trades is 100% behind it. So we support it in full. So I'll wait till the question ends.
Thank you. Representative Norton, did you have some other testifiers or a couple minutes for them? Because as I look into the audience, I see all sorts of contractors and union members and economic development people and all sorts of others. I'm going to ask if there's anyone who would like to testify against this and see if they can get to the table before Rochester tackles them.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Gary Smith, president of Rochester Area Economic Development, and obviously here to speak in support of House File 409. While no one can predict with certainty what the future looks like with regard to health care, it's like Yogi Berra once said, the future ain't what it used to be. Globalization of health care, demographic changes, continued advances in research, development of new business models, along with changing consumer habits related to health care, are combined to create significant change in the marketplace. When the dust settles, there's going to be 3 to 4 major medical destination centers in the U.S. Bottom line, significant change is about to happen with regard to health care, and whether we like it or not, in the end, we have but two choices to make. One is to anticipate this change and use it to our strategic advantage, and the other is to either consciously or unconsciously ignore it and simply be consumed by it. Of course, I'm advocating we anticipate it by creating the organization and financial structures needed to support a partnership between the state of Minnesota, Mayo Clinic, local government, business community, so we're in a strategic position to firmly establish Minnesota as a destination medical center. Mayo's already made the strategic decision to become one of the 3 or 4 destination centers, and as evidenced by the bill before you, has expressed a preference and desire to do this in Minnesota. The community of Rochester has made the decision to join this partnership, and we sincerely hope the state does that as well. I've been a practicing economic development professional for over 34 years, last 24 in Rochester. The Destination Medical Center plan represents, as you heard, one of the largest and ambitious economic development initiatives in the country and will deliver significant benefits to Minnesota. I'm not going to go reiterate those. You've heard all those, so in the interest of time, I won't do that. But I will say one of the other hats I wear is I'm currently the chair of the school board in Minnesota, and in Rochester, Minnesota, and we're going to get significant more revenue as a result of this over time as well. But also I wanted to state that DMC is also going to enable us to capture the economic benefits accruing from startup businesses. On March 1st, we will open the Mayo Clinic Business Accelerator, which is located in the Minnesota Bio Business Center in Rochester. This accelerator is a partnership between Mayo, the City of Rochester, and the organization I work for, Rochester Area Economic Development. We're going to open with maybe 8 or 9 tenants. I'd say 9 because we're still trying to get the last one signed up. 5 of these are going to be new businesses, and the others are going to be support businesses, including 2 venture capital firms. While we're fortunate to have this kind of opportunities, we're also vulnerable to have these new businesses leave our community. But DMC will help us build the infrastructure needed to support these businesses, long-term growth needs, and help us retain these businesses' presence in Minnesota and in Rochester for years to come. When we built the Minnesota Bio Business Center, we said at the time the building was not an end but a symbol of what's to come. I say today that DMC is not symbolic, but rather a solid plan and structure for securing a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for economic growth, an opportunity that other states and communities would love to have. Let's anticipate the change coming our way, and I urge you to make the strategic decision to make Minnesota a destination medical center. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take questions, I will ask if there's anyone that, or did you have another testifier, or...
I did not, Mr. Chair. I did want to point out an error that we found in the brief, if I could do that. Just
the House research brief?
Yes, and they almost never make errors. But there's a tiny little error that isn't so tiny to the folks behind me who saw it. On subdivision 11 under project, the very last bullet, it should read, building and equipping suitable structures on authority-owned land for sale or lease except to a medical business entity, which is defined as Mayo Clinic.
Where are you at?
What page?
The second page.
Second page?
It says subdivision 11.
Section 1, subdivision 11?
Yes, the very last bullet point. It's supposed to be except to a, the last sentence, except to a medical business entity, which is Mayo Clinic, as defined in the bill. We just wanted to be very clear. We said it, but this document kind of contradicts what we said, and we want to just make clear the bill says is correct. It's just the brief that had one word missing.
Okay. Members, I think what I'm hearing here is that second page, subdivision 11, after, I don't know what how to define it, but...
Or lease.
Strike that or lease to a medical business entity?
No, after the word lease, if you would put accept.
Oh.
To a medical business entity.
So I think bullet point, in other words.
Yeah. That would just clarify that it isn't to go to Mayo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we go to questions, is there anyone that wanted to speak against this, the DMC? Anyone that wanted to speak against it? All right. So, if there's some questions, I think Representative Clark got her hand up first, and then we have Mr. Uglem, Representative Uglem. Did I get it right? Close.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe I'm not so exactly sure who could answer this, if the author or I think the person from Life Science Alley brought up some of the businesses that would be benefiting, which would include biomedical device and pharmacological drug companies. Are they coming in for any of the funding to help create this structure, this project?
Mr. Chair, again, no. Shay Mandel with Life Science Alley. Not at all. So this is all about the infrastructure development around it. So my reference to the benefits of our member companies in terms of the ecosystem, for example, one of our large medical device companies, and I won't name them, you know, has recently entered into about a $20 million investment in a partnership with Mayo around some pure research. So we're not seeking any direct dollars. None of our member companies are seeking any direct dollars. But I just thought it was important to provide the perspective on the impact that Mayo has, not just in our public health, but also our economic health.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Clark.
I don't doubt that you will benefit. I was asking if there's going to be any contributions from those companies to this project.
To date, at this point, Mr. Chair, I apologize. At this point, I mean, our members are not any companies that would necessarily be involved in building infrastructure being involved in that. So our companies will continue, I think, to make more investments in Mayo and perhaps more investments in Rochester. Certainly the bioincubator that was mentioned and some of the new company growth that was mentioned will certainly perhaps see our companies investing in those future companies. Does that answer your question?
Oh, well, partly. And Mr. Chair, so the big drug companies aren't coming in to help at all?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Mano.
I'm unaware specifically of a big drug company coming in on this project.
Thank you.
Representative Hugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to say that I think this has been a wonderful presentation, and this is a project that I think is probably exhibits some of the things that we need to do more in this state. And a public-private partnership with virtually no risk to the state's investment in this. The job situation, we've all gone through the recession and we've cried about jobs and we've struggled to find jobs and the good-paying jobs and the expansion of the mail on a worldwide basis, I think, is absolutely phenomenal. And there's no question about it. I mean, we are competing. We are competing on an international stage, and we have a huge, huge asset here in our state, and we need to protect that. And I think this is just really a well-thought-out, wonderful proposal. I have one question for Representative Norton. I understand that there are no new state taxes involved on this project. Is that correct?
Representative Norton.
Thank you. No, there are no new state taxes, and in fact, the state of Minnesota will grow its tax base in a big way. Income, sales, you name it.
Yep. Another perfect example of why this project should go forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Norton. It's always fearful to hear a project like this, a lot of positive things, and you don't hear anybody talking about the possible downside, the risks involved if you don't make your projections. And I kind of wish that we would hear a little bit more about that, about the risks and the possible downsides on this, because I think it's a healthy discussion to have. We all know about Mayo, and I certainly do applaud this, and I'm going to support this. But it's a huge risk, as we all should understand. My specific question, however, is who's our greatest competitor? What is, and it's been said already, but Representative Norton, maybe you can just address it one more time. I mean, what is forcing us to do this and do this now? Usually something is forcing you to do it. When you take on such a huge project like this, what is that fear, or what is that for? What is that thing that's forcing us to do this,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Norton.
Thank you. I'll answer, and then we can hand it off to the folks at Mayo. First, I think, as has been said, healthcare is vitally important to all of us and to every citizen in the state and this country. We have a baby boom generation that is retiring and going to be using more health care. Technology is changing and rapidly. In fact, we can hardly keep it up in our training people to provide the jobs when they're created. And we know that Mayo Clinic is going to be one of those destinations and has a record of that. The question is, two, should Mayo continue to be and fight to remain the leading medical center in the world? And I think the answer is yes. The second question is, when they do that, should they do it here in Minnesota or should they do it elsewhere in the world? And some of our competitors, which you mentioned there were some, and they've been Cleveland Clinic and MassGen and some of the others, Johns Hopkins, they're already having investments in their states and communities. There are even some public dollars going in to support those investments in other communities. And we're asking here for the state of Minnesota to partner with Mayo, but with our city, really, to support this massive investment, this $3 billion Mayo investment, plus the other private businesses that are going to grow around it. Because when our community grows, I mean, this is a rapid-paced change that's going to happen in my community. And when it does, our city has to be ready. And our city currently, as all of your cities, certainly couldn't grow, you know, half again their population to be able to handle it, the infrastructure. And so we're asking for some help with that particular component. As far as the risk, there really isn't any, because if Mayo, the risk is to Mayo, they're going to invest $3 billion, and if it doesn't generate anything, we don't give them a cent. So, yes, the risk is there for them. The risk for the state is not there. And this bill, that's one of the reasons I was so excited to carry it. It's so unique, and there's no money going out until they've been able to prove to all of us that it's worth it for the state to step forward. So that's my layman's answer, and I'll let the Mayo maybe give a little bit more, if that's all right, Mr. Chair.
Did that answer it, or would you like more?
Let's hear from Mayo briefly on the risk element.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. Thank you, Representative, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. I'd like to comment on both questions. Your first question is a critical one. We really need to understand the downside, the risk that this project involves. Not doing it, of course, is a huge risk for Mayo Clinic, because our competitors worldwide are making the investments. We have to stay the destination people are going to want to choose, who can choose where to come for their health care. So we have some risk if we don't do it, and we'd have to decide where else to put our investment. You asked the question as a public servant taking care of Minnesota that I ask every day in the clinic with the patient. I'm looking for that medication with the greatest benefit to you at the absolute lowest risk to you. And that's what this is for the government. No public money goes into this project unless Mayo and our other the private sector generate the revenue to the state, and it's proof of concept. The money has to be delivered to the state. Mayo paces its investment. We're not going to write a check, you know, for $3.5 billion. There goes my salary. Well, most of it. Oh, I'm sorry, but we would pace our investment and be prudent so that we can, if we have to, reassess, is this the right business model for us now to be investing? And if we have to shift, we have to shift. It's not our first choice, or we'd be pursuing the others. This is our first choice. I hope, and then to your second question, what's triggering this? It is the investments that others are making in this global medical practice, the destination medical center practice, and we can't even stay where we are if they are as successful as they're planning to be. And we want to be more than successful. We want to do more than maintain. We want to grow this.
Representative Norton? Before we go on, because we've got like four other people who are looking to ask questions in the next 10 minutes, what I would suggest, and I actually have done some research, the dollar figures that are being handed out to Johns Hopkins, Massachusetts General, Cleveland Clinic, around the world. You know, I've been doing this for 15 years. I'm not stunned very often, but those dollar figures stun me. If you could do the research and find those dollar figures that are basically public subsidies to private medical corporations and get them to the committee, and I would suggest to all of the legislature, it would be a big, big piece, not at the moment, because I'm going to go to, I think Representative Christel had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question and a comment. I've given to understand that Mayo is set up as a nonprofit entity.
Chair Mahoney, yes, sir.
And I just wanted to make a point about that. That was my understanding, that the leading medical facility in the world, and I believe you are that, is nonprofit.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You actually took one of my questions for me. Thank you. But I do have
a... glad to help out.
That's all right. And it's scary that you and I think alike, but we'll get... No, kidding. I'm fascinated by the fact that, you know, that this is really competitive, that it's a competitive market that you're in, and that you recognize that and you're moving forward, and that's something that I think that we all have to learn to think like, having been a coach for so many years and raised kids who are athletes. That's just part of my fiber. The other thing I like about this is the you know, we talk a lot about public-private partnerships. This actually seems to me to be a private-public partnership, in that the private stuff is going to be put in place first. And then the other thing that I like, and I'm just making a statement more than I am going to ask one question. I like the performance standards and the outcomes, you know, that have to be measured and so forth in order for the public participation to take place. On the little map that you have with all the dots, can you explain to me in just a little bit more detail? You got 59 counties that are represented with Mayo employees. Do those people work in Rochester, satellite clinics, that sort of thing? I noticed there's a little dot in Pennington County, and as the chair and the committee knows, I just love to talk about Northwest Minnesota.
Ms. Simmons.
Yes, Chair Mahoney, Representative Fabian, members of the committee. First of all, the answer to your question about the chart we showed, those dots are in counties that have people who are employed at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. So, yes, I don't know how they get there. I mean, I don't know how that group gets there. I know where the buses come from some areas, but, yes, those are Rochester employees. May I make a comment also in response to your question, Chair Mahoney, real quick?
Sure.
We do have the numbers, and we will give them to you when you want them, because that was part of our analysis to look at what the competitors are investing.
I knew you did. It was just,
I want you to know I do my homework.
Representative Albright, you had a couple of comments.
Thank you.
Then I think we're going to, because I'm not seeing any other questions, I'm going to make a statement or a comment or two, and then we'll take a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I when I was first approached to consider co-authoring on this bill, being from a financial perspective, I needed to know and get down in the weeds on the numbers. And I must say, and applaud you in terms of your preparedness on this matter, on your willingness to step out and lead with regard to putting your own skin in the game. And so I applaud you on this. And I think as we look around the room and the people that have testified, this is a true Minnesota collaboration. Every sector of the economy has spoken to the affirmation of how important and how vital this project is, not only as a destination medical center, but as a destination state. Mm-hmm. And so I would just close by saying that this is not only a tactical, a visionary glimpse in terms of where we need to go as a state, but I think it's a strategic move that is well worth every penny that we put into it. So thank you very much.
Mr. Fabian, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr.
time.
Chair. Just one real quick question. I'm not real familiar with Rochester. Your airport facilities, what are they?
Chair Mahoney and Mr. Fabian, that's a great question. Transportation is a huge issue. What I can tell you is that Mayo Clinic actually built the airport because we knew we needed to get our patients there from all over the world. And so we have maintained a great interest and a great relationship with the carriers that serve Minnesota. The airport is a good airport. It's an international airport.
And it probably wouldn't be as important if we could just get a high-speed rail from the Union Depot down
to Rochester. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to mention that.
Members, this has been a pretty big love fest. I will say that, and rightly so in an Jobs and Economic Development Committee where you're proposing 15,000 new jobs, $5 billion worth of investment. I'm a co-author on the bill. I do have, it's got a long ways to go. You've got some questions there. I do understand a lot more of it than I've spoken to. I could have done a lot of leading questions here. I do want to dispel a myth that I've heard from other members, I've read, and I've heard on the kind of blogs that this is, Rochester wants this as a standalone bill. You know, it's not going to happen that way. This will be included in an omnibus bill. It's just too huge because it really does open up a Pandora's box. It's a dangerous road for the state to go down in terms of financing. It would probably be the first time it's been done in the United States, if I remember right. It's not the first time it's been proposed. You have a lot of work in front of you to get this thing through. But, you know, if you, and it rightly so should be looked at very, very closely in our tax committee and included in the tax bill at the end of the day. Because if you open this up, and I have some concerns in how you've structured your overall controlling interest. I mean, I think it should be a regional area that is in control of this rather than the city of Rochester and one representative from Olmsted County. I think this, you are the gorilla in the living room, so to speak, and you affect everything in southeastern Minnesota. And these dollars will affect everything in southeastern Minnesota. So I think you need to look at that. Having said that, I think this is a great project. I'm on board on the front, and I hope to be able to vote on it in our tax bill at the end of the year. So having said all that I needed to say, I'm going to ask Representative Norton to renew her motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion that House File 409 pass and be re-referred to state government op.
GovOps.
GovOps, I'm sorry.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. You're on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.